It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host, Tony Anderson, and I am joined by my extremely good friend, Mr. Football himself. It's Craig Fowler. Hi, Craig.
Definitely not deserving of that nickname, but thank you very much, Tony.
It's what, good extremely to be good here. Friend?
The Mr. Football thing.
I don't know. What you spent one season where you watched every single top flight game in a season. No one else has been that sad to do it. So you have to be Mr. Football.
That was a mistake that I'll never repeat since. Actually, doing this, preparing for this podcast did remind me of that because I've seen five games this weekend. I've watched five full matches this weekend. So that did remind me a bit of that when it's getting towards... I've kind of got old from fatigue in general. So the games I watch live on the telly, I was more kind of like, okay, right, focus, try and focus. Whereas the Aberdeen and other games that I watched today, I was maybe paying a bit more attention to. But then it's maybe because I'm trying. I have to try harder to pay attention to those games rather than when Celtic Rangers are looking a bit vulnerable and I'm thinking, oh, they could be get beat here.
But because you just get a look. Yeah, because I did when I'm more prepared, because obviously someone else may be doing it. I've jumped on relatively late and I was at doing things with my wife, family stuff. So I'm not as prepared. So I was really pleased to hear that you'd watched so much.
Yeah, I've watched five games and you've watched the one I've not seen.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got things covered, but I've barely even been able to watch sports scene. I'll quickly watch that before. So I'm definitely not Mr. Football this weekend. I was watching an old Celtic fan struggle to walk anywhere in his house on Saturday at a party for Mandy's dad's 60th. He was the drunkest man you've possibly ever seen. Fell twice. and that's the least of it.
House parties are dangerous.
They sure are. They sure are. I was hiding out the back for large swathes of it. But... let's talk about football, Fowler. And we were all off air discussing, it's unusual for us to start with the old firm Terrace Podcast, but I just think we have to accept it. It's the most exciting part of the season now. Hearts.
Especially with the only other thing that's really that interesting are the two teams going for the final European place and the two teams trying to avoid 11th place, and they all lost.
And the two teams trying to find out that playoff place were playing the old firm. So
not the playoff place, the European place.
The European places. So like they were big games for things that we're waiting to see. Yeah. There's no denying that. And I think we are going to start at old Floody itself, Dens Park. The pitch looked fine to me as I was drifting in and out of consciousness on Sunday afternoon watching the game. But I think there's only one place to start further before we even go into the actual mechanics of this football match. And James Forrest, should he be on the plane?
I've thought about this and I've kind of flip-flopped in this. Initially, I was like, do you know what? Why not? Why not take James Forrest to Germany? It's a 26-man squad. He's somebody that Clark will know. He's got loads of experience for Scotland. He's got experience of playing... well, he's got experience of playing against Germany in Germany. And he's... I mean, for a lot of Scotland career, was somebody that I didn't necessarily rate that highly, but always thought he was decent enough for Scotland because we didn't really have many players who could take the ball from A to B. And I was like, well, we still don't have many players that can take the ball from A to B and can run at folk. So he is kind of what we're missing if you're talking about James Forrest, even as recently as 2 years ago. But I think you see now that he's just not quite got the fitness levels. I mean, he is, I'd have to check how old he is, but I know he's in his
32.
But he has
a lot of miles on the clock, though, for a guy like James Forrest.
Aye, he's somebody that's never really been injured. I know he's not really played that often the last couple of seasons, as Ange didn't really fancy him, and then Rodgers fancy him a bit more, but it's kind of mainly been used coming off the bench this season and last. But before then, he was somebody that just seemed to play all the time. And yeah, a lot of miles on the clock. He looks like he's lost a lot. He certainly has lost a bit of burst. And I think he's lost a bit of just fitness as well. Mm. And that also probably comes from not playing an awful lot. So that could maybe be, remember, you never know, like, 'cause he had to be taken off in this game when he was one of the Celtic's best players. And he's had to be, I mean, I remember you guys saying like he was taken off at the end of the cup final, and that was kind of like a fitness thing. I think that was just taking off a forward to bring on a defender. I don't think really Rodgers gave him that much thought of being like, he's knackered. I just thought that was more a bit a case of, let's get one of the smallest players on the park off and let's bring on somebody big so we can defend a ball in the penalty area, which they didn't do. But that's not James Forrest's fault. So I don't know. I don't have as much evidence that he's kidding. Because if you go to take him, he's not exactly, he was never really that much of a kind of difference maker in a Scotland shirt anyway. It was more about...
Scored a hat-trick against Kazakhstan, for fuck's sake.
Okay, against quality opposition, he was never much of a difference maker in a Scotland jersey. From memory, I might be a little bit harsh on there, but from memory, I don't really kind of think of him that. I thought him as somebody who would come in and ask questions of the other team with his pace and do a job going forwards and backwards, because I've said many times in the show throughout the years, I think James Forrest is a very good defender for somebody who's an out-and-out winger. And if we could get that kind of player, if that player still existed, then perfect kind of backup right wing-back. I'd certainly rather have that type of player than Tony Ralston. But can James, if you're going to take James Forrest, then you're basically going to take him for his experience, and that means he's going to have to be starting games and playing 90 minutes. And is he capable of that? 3 times in a row for Scotland and Germany? No, probably not.
But he does. The tough thing, there's another alternative to that is, like you say, we basically don't have anyone who dribbles. Like, I mean, Andy Robertson's arguably, and Tierney are arguably the best ball carriers in the team. John McGinn can do it a bit at times, but it's more with their momentum rather than with skills. I mean, they don't really do it from like a standing start. Like the type of like what you'd think of an old-fashioned winger, what he would be able to do. And maybe the question is, could you get Forrest to do it for 10, 15 minutes in a game? Because since we're talking about a skill set people don't have, I'm like you, it's really hard. It's fun because we really are lacking a player, and it's not, it's cool to see a player maybe take a late run at this that we could do with. But I'm not sure he has necessarily got it in him. But we do lack that type of player.
I think Forrest is always, he's never really been somebody that's been too creative for his, he has obviously racked up loads of assists in the Scottish Premiership over the years, but he's never really been somebody that he's, when he became really good, it was the fact that he kind of learned to score loads of goals rather than kind of learned how to properly cross. So if we're talking for somebody for the last 15 minutes, Forrest is just not going to have the ability at this stage of his career to get into the areas to score goals. And we're really relying on somebody, I would say, more so to whip balls in the last 10, 15 minutes. So if we're talking somebody who we think is capable of playing right wing back in the Scottish Premiership, I would rather take Danny Armstrong.
I would definitely take Danny. I would take Danny Armstrong because he can, it'd be another person that can play in the three up top, and someone who has this season experience playing wing back. And he probably wouldn't start him anyway. So when you're using him as a quote-unquote wing-back, you're probably chasing a game. You're chasing a goal. Then I would say that his defensive nous that could maybe be sort of as vulnerable wouldn't be as big an issue here because you'd be using him purely as a crosser.
Yeah, crosser. Aim for Dykes, Porteous, Hanley if he manages to get fit.
He was on the bench. He was on the bench this weekend for Norwich.
So there's a recipe there.
Yeah, I'd say... I for most people, I think a lot. I mean, Armstrong's posted the numbers as well, and he doesn't. And he you doubt he'd be high maintenance at all because his work ethic's what's taken him from being a nobody in the Championship to now like I would say a genuine argument for him to be included in the squad. And be interested to see, because the thing about Armstrong, you could get him on the coming up, because we're playing with some weaker teams in these friendlies. You get someone like Armstrong in, getting an assist or two under his belt, and just feeling good about himself. And as you say, you're not going to be using him to go up against anyone per se. You'd be using him for a skill set he has, which is crossing. And then you'll be talking about chucking him on for 5 minutes. There's room for these types of players in a 26-man squad. And I mean, as you're saying, these are the players we absolutely lack.
And if you're talking as well of using the bigger squad, if you want to take players to benefit us in the long term, I know that Danny Armstrong is, he's not exactly young. He's surprisingly old because he just kind of only burst on the scene the last couple of seasons. But he's 26 and will turn 27 later this year. But that's still, I mean, if he continues or even kind of maintains his career trajectory where he goes to just become a very good player, I think he'll probably go higher than this, but even if he just becomes a very good player at Hearts, Hibs or Aberdeen, then that's still something that Steve Clarke would kind of have a look at and go, yeah, if there is nobody else that can kind of do his skill set, and if we are lacking in that area, I mean, I know that Nathan Patterson will eventually come back, but also I'd quite like somebody who, despite all his talent, actually plays well for Scotland. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily always the guy with the most talent. But if he does, then it'd be good to kind of take Armstrong along and just kind of and give him that ability to progress as a player and just be around that environment. And yeah, I don't know if I would definitely take him. I'd have to sit down. Max Johnson's kind of serious consideration for that kind of problem area at right wing back with Hickey back in training, but still a bit of a doubt. And
I think Johnson's a stick on now.
You think Johnson will play? Yeah,
I just can't see. There basically isn't another option. And he's had a good season for a team that's, I'm not too up on Austrian football, but they're not going for the league.
Yeah,
and I mean Austrian football. I mean, it's no weaker than the Scottish. It's not. It's just another one of those middle of the road, European leagues. So if Johnson was at a team, at Rangers or Celtic, going for the league in Scotland, he'd be on the plane. So I do think if he's at one of the best teams in Austria playing well, I don't really see what the issue
kind of,
is there.
That's kind of similar to Nathan Patterson, I think. I'm pretty sure he was first played by Scotland when he was still a backup at Rangers. And Max Johnson is kind of similar, but actually getting more minutes than Patterson was managing at Rangers, because Patterson just couldn't shift Tavernier, who would play 90 minutes every single game. Whereas Johnson has come off the bench a lot, but at least he's played in most games.
Yeah, and he's got the things that we're looking for a right wing back, and you're also not having to turn a James Forrest or a Danny Armstrong, who aren't naturally in that position, into them either.
Yes.
So I don't think there's an argument against Johnson not being in the squad. I imagine he'll be in the squad, and I imagine he's going to have to play. And he's certainly put a lot more football than the Bricky, Tony Ralston.
Yeah.
We just don't see what at all. If we're being honest, I've seen him play for Scotland.
He's just one of those guys that I kind of mentioned. Like, it's not always the talented ones that play the best. He's looked fine. He's actually played all right every time he's played for Scotland. But he's just kind of, when you watch him at domestic level, you're just like, surely we're not relying on him. It's maybe unfair, but it is what it is. He doesn't seem to play much for Celtic.
But let's go to the game, Fowler. And so Dundee, he's starting to look at this sort of the defensive side of their game. And I thought they've looked a lot better defensively in recent weeks. Dodgson seems to be able to play some sort of like passable role at left back. And obviously I think the big reason for all this is that Portales has been back fit and playing. But I'm right in thinking it was a back four they went with in this game, wasn't it?
It was a back four. Portales did make an arse for the goal, it should be said. Then we kind of made amends at the other end with his shot being deflected in. Aye, Dodgson can't play at wing back, just a bit too kind of cumbersome and not enough of a good footballer. Can't play at centre back, too much of a bomb scare. Does look like he's not bad at left back, and mainly due to his delivery. He had a number of very kind of wicked balls into the penalty area for this one. But is it talking about the defence overall, I think Joe Shaughnessy belongs in Dundee's strongest team, I would still say, but he's not played particularly great across the last couple of months. So maybe I know he was forced out of the team rather than taken out of the team, but him being out of the side has maybe just kind of allowed it to kind of settle into some. Because I looked at it at the start when I was like, Portales and Lamy, centre-half pairing, Dodgson, McGee. I was like, this might be a tasty game for Celtic. But no, Dundee competed very well. and were probably unlucky to be two goals down. And at the end of the game, I mean, there wasn't really an awful lot in it in terms of chances, and could feel themselves a bit hard. It was the same with both teams that played the Celtic and Rangers this weekend. I didn't look. I'm actually just going to check it now, see what the expected goals was, because I know in the Rangers game it was very close in terms of the chances Rangers created compared to Dundee. Let me just second here to check the Celtic one. And yeah, pretty much the same. Actually, almost exactly the same difference as the Rangers St Mirren one. I think that was 1.3 to like 108. And this one is 109 for Dundee to 138 for Celtic. I know our listeners are hugely fascinated by XG chat, but it does kind of paint a picture of the fact that Dundee created a number of decent chances themselves and limited Celtic pretty well. And while we're talking about the defence, I would say that the credit of that more so belongs to the midfield area.
So we're looking at, I was about to say this, the four at the back sort of allows them to play the sort of, we'll start using all the language here, the double pivot.
No, oh, there we go.
In front of the back, which allows, because Boateng and Silla don't always play together. But this four at the back, they too feel like you're playing two solid roles. Do you think that actually makes them more solid than when they're in a back three?
I mean, quite possibly. It's certainly an interesting argument. I mean, they've made the back three that kind of part of their identity this season, so you really have to see it for a while, but I mean, it's hard to say in kind of a smaller sample size, but there's certainly kind of good work in there that you can keep things, you can protect, especially with like Portales and Lamy, neither of whom are like big guys who are going to win like a lot in the air, but you can protect them by having two guys that are just kind of really solid. I mean, Boateng's got the ability in him to nick the ball away from opponents and get into the fight. And he has got a bit of physicality about him, but I think the most impressive thing about Boateng is always kind of his cool head and his ability to show poise in possession. Silla is somebody that's just a disruptor. I like watching Silla. I like how much he just gets in the way of the opposition. And that's what he did very well in this game. Him, Boateng together, and then McCowan just, as he's done all season, just plays with a doggedness and a drive. But not even just talking about the kind of his qualities, obvious qualities on the ball, but just like off the ball as well. Somebody that kind of plays the game a lot bigger than their size and height. Mm-hmm. And the three of them together just kind of made life quite uncomfortable for the Celtic trio, none of whom I thought played particularly well.
That was them back. That was like, obviously we've got the midfield that they've been missing for such large parts of the season back there, which I always thought was going to be the thing that was maybe going to push them on. It still might be, and it looks in a bit. But in this game, as you say, they didn't have over a lot of influence over that Dundee midfield.
Yeah, I think when you look at the three, the one weakness they've got between them is that they're not very physical as a trio. But that doesn't matter a lot of the time because they're just so much better than everybody else.
They've got the ball the whole time.
Yes, but if you think that McGregor's got an injury that he's not going to get like operated on until after the Euros, so he's kind of struggling a bit. O'Reilly's been kind of carrying Celtic for a lot of the season and kind of starting to look a bit leggy. And Hatate's just come back from injury. He's not at full strength himself. So when you kind of reduce them all to like 80%, then when you start to fight them, then that's when maybe come into problems like they did against Dundee. I think next week, is it Hearts they've got next? I think they'll be fine. Hearts have not got the most kind of physical of midfields either. So it'll be a good opponent for them to get up to speed to before they come into that match against.
Well, it's always McGregor's getting up to speed for the Euros. That's really all I'm really interested in.
Yes.
Out of all of them. But suppose we come on to the goals, Fowler. James Forrest, first one. Beautiful. What a strike that is.
Yes.
So difficult.
Very instinctive, but yeah, just a terrific finish just to lash it and stick it in the corner. Aye. Forrest, he still showed that he's got the quality, that he can make a difference off the bench. It's just whether he has much left of the tank to do much else. I think he's out of contract at the end of the season, isn't he? Been an interesting one given his recent form, if Rodgers does decide to kind of offer him something. Is he out of contract? Let me just double check that.
The father of success, is that what he was referred to by?
Oh, he's not out of contract, actually. I must have missed that. He must have got an extension.
The father of success, that's what he was referred to as by Rodgers, wasn't it?
Aye, aye. No, he's out of contract at the end of next season.
Mm-hmm. And was there anyone else that you wanted to talk about? I mean, Kyogo.
No, we should probably move on. We've already done 20 minutes of one game.
We're too busy talking about James Forrest and Danny Armstrong for large portions of it. But yeah, let's go to Paisley then. No, too far. They're just outside the Glasgow. Paisley, that means I've typed in Paisley rather than St Mirren in my Y Scout there. Nothing's going to come up for that. The Paisley Pandas. Where Rangers went and won 2-1 against St Mirren with a Cyril Dessers goal, which brought him on to 20 goals this season. Craig Fowler, will anyone admit that he's all right?
He's a funny one, because I still don't think he necessarily played that well in this game. He wasn't too bad, but it was for what you want for somebody his size and a Rangers forward. You want somebody kind of dominating opposition, and he doesn't seem to do it. But to give him his due, what he does seem to be very good at is getting into areas to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
Where he struggles a little bit is that he's got 20 goals this season. He should probably have about 40. Like, he's missed a lot of very good chances, and he's missed chances in kind of key moments as well. If you think back to the fact, did he not do it in both games against Celtic, the first two games of the league season? He certainly done it at the game at Celtic Park where he went through on the keeper and just didn't look like he was going to score and didn't. And I think, I can't remember if he'd done that at the Ibrox in the initial game, but he certainly had, I'm sure he had a big chance in that one. But is he any good? I suppose you have to say he is good-ish.
Like, yeah, because he's still, there's been a lot.
He's effective. He's effective. Like, he scored goals. He scored goals.
Because, I think it was Craig Anderson was saying that he's the first player since Chris Boyd to score 20 goals in his opening season as a Rangers player. But he's still very uneasy on the eye. He's very cumbersome. He's not fleet-footed or anything like that. And I think we always have to remember, we judge Rangers and Celtic strikers on more than goals. Because, I mean, you'd have to be fucking shit to not score goals in the Rangers and Celtic team. Do you know what I mean? You do. You're gonna get countless chances. And I'm not trying to demean the 20 goals as well, because not everyone gets 20 goals in a season. But obviously some of these have been big goals. So, like, the goal he scored in Europe against, was it Cebes? But it was like fucking prime Fernando Torres. And then he scored really, really weird. He scored a lot of weird goals like that, where it's like, Jesus Christ, he's a player. Like, you remember the goal he scored at Easter Road, where it's like with his instep as he's running at full pelt and he manages to control it at the bottom corner. It was an unusual finish. But then when you're like, he definitely meant that. And it was a really, really tidy way to score the goal.
It seems to lack a bit of a composure in front of goal at times, which is, it's funny you mentioned that one, because that goal against Hibs is like tremendous composure. It was also a point in, I think it was at a point in the game as well, where the pressure was off a little bit. Am I right in saying?
I've seen that a lot. For there's been a lot, maybe your third goals, and your, especially when he was trying to get himself up to speed, you know, when he was struggling. And I think another thing that's maybe benefited him as well is obviously getting rid of Lammers, and it's not like there's two guys stinking the place up. Vying for, I guess, like there was a, it felt like he'd won a battle there, and then he was going to be a lot of faith put in him when he's like that. Maybe helped his confidence.
I think it took him, Ewan talked about this at the start of the season when he was still hopeful that he was going to come good. And I think, I don't know, Ewan would say yes or no as to whether he's been proven right on that, but he was basically saying that, like, Dessers, I think he's just like a bad fit for Scottish football, because when his success abroad is because he's quite big. He's a big and physical player, and he's going up against defenders and in a style of football that is not as used to that. So he was able to use it well and use it to his advantage. And then he comes to Scottish football, and if everybody's not necessarily big, but everybody's physical, and the game's really fast, and you can't just kind of skate by on that alone. And I think he's adapted reasonably well, but you can still see that he's a limited player He's not big enough that he's able to bully the majority of Scottish football centre-halves. So it's just kind of been, it's something that he's just kind of, he's not quite fully equipped to be as good as he probably could be in Scottish football. But at the same time, if he continues like how he's been since, what, November, December time, across a full season next campaign and gets like 30-odd goals, I mean, it's kind of hard to argue with that, regardless of how crap you think he is if you play a ball on his feet.
Aye, exactly. But again, there's no doubt Rangers will try and upgrade on him. They will. They will. But then again, it looks like now he's going to get himself to a point where at least he'll have the faith of the fans. He might not be a fan favourite, but he'll have trust. And they'll not be like humming and hawing when he comes on, you know, like that type of thing. And once you release that, then he just becomes like a very decent striker to have around. But they'll want a better focal point, Rangers. They will, to play into feet, because that's what helps you. That's what helps you strangle teams, is if you've got that type of thing. Because if you're playing over to Silva on the left, can't have faith in him taking the ball in. You can't have faith in him taking the ball in. Then you can't have faith in Dessers putting the ball in. And this is what happens when you end up in dogfights with teams like St Mirren. Because you can't really dominate teams to the level you want to if the strikers are any much better with their ball, with their back to the game. Or if you don't have wide players who are really good at ball carrying, you know, when it's like you've got a winger who just every time picks it up, he can carry the ball 40 yards. That means you're just always on top, always on top. And that's what stops Rangers doing it, because they can't dominate to the level. And that brings me on to the next question. Because of the fact that they can't dominate quite to the levels that you would expect the Rangers team to do, due to some of the factors we were just saying there, is this defence being shown up a bit more, because it has to stand up a lot more to a lot more questions than it would have had to previously? And does that mean, is that being shown that it might not be good enough in this specific Rangers team for them to win the league?
That's what caught my eye the most when I was watching this game live. I was like, that's defence. What has happened? Let me just check the stats. Is it still number one in the league, or have Celtic now got a... The Rangers have still got a lower goals conceded than Celtic, which actually surprised me considering how they've been playing recently. Like, Connor Goldson coming out, and I think that what I said on the top 12 centre-backs pod, that I had goals very low at like number seven. But I think it shows kind of what I'm saying, that Philip Cowan's looking at Goldson himself thinking, like, you look creaky. I'm not sure whether he should definitely be out of the side or not, although he hasn't been playing well recently. Balogun and Suter don't inspire a lot of confidence in me either. And, I mean, also as well, especially because he's playing them like the wrong way around. Like, if you're going to bring... And I know maybe it's a case that Suter has been playing left centre-back for a few months now, consecutively in the team, and he's actually starting to look good in a Rangers shirt. So maybe if you're Clement, you're like, okay, why mess with that? Like, why move Suter over to the right? He seems to now be a bit more comfortable. Or just put Balogun there on the right of the two of them. But also, Balogun's played on the left before, and that's what usually where he's played for Rangers, is on the left of the back two. And Suter's, like, you're still taking away a lot of what Suter's good at if you force him onto his left foot a lot of the time. So that doesn't really make much sense to me. But it's also, they've got the major problems at fullback. Borna Barisic, he's just Hart's just not in it anymore. He really looks like he could barely give a fuck. And James Tavernier is... Ever since we really went to bat for him and we were really kind of singing his praises and we were kind of getting into arguments in the group chat about whether he's overrated or underrated, he has been stinking recently. And he was all over the place again against St Mirren.
It's just... And it seems unusual because this is normally... But again, it's maybe because the questions that get asked of the players now, as I said, they go into they're in head-to-head games now, where the games are going pretty much end-to-end. And so they're being asked questions all the time, and we're possibly seeing that they maybe aren't that good when they're not, when they are being constantly asked them. But who knows? Tavernier is the guy that you thought you'd be able to count on during the run-in. But I'd say, as the captain, the things that I've normally spewed up for him for, at this point, he is flagging when they need him most, which is pretty unusual for Tavernier over maybe the last 4 years or whatever. So who knows? And yeah, you do have to say, like, scoring the penalties and that now doesn't mask how vulnerable he's looking at fullback. And just with Rangers in general, it just looks like there's no guarantee they're ever going to win the game. But
no. I mean, Diamande was one of the kind of better players in this one. He's got... You look at their team and you'd actually just look at it going like, yeah, Dessers, he'll get chances and you hope he can take it. Lundstrom's been pretty crap recently as well. Diamande, good. Cantwell, good. Butland, good. Great save for Butland at one each.
Other Sterling, than that, good. Whatever role that they use him.
It's just hard to...
But you don't want to play him as your main winger. You don't want to use him as it's like he's having to like sub in all around the pitch, and it actually is having a detrimental effect on him. But I just don't think teams look like they're really feared of them. And if you look at if we move on to Mirren, we should probably move on.
Go for it.
Sorry, I know we're having a right good spraff here because I've not seen anything. We've got Mandron is someone I wanted to mention further because with Robinson, I really thought Ayunga, perfect player for St Mirren. He had a really good opening season at St Mirren. Mandron, he can ruffle some feathers up front. But would you say you've been surprised at quite how little they've missed Ayunga due to the performances of Mandron this season?
Well, Ayunga's come back from injury and hasn't been as good as Mandron since it was quite a bad injury he had, so maybe that's kind of hampered him a bit. But yeah, Mandron deservedly is our first choice number nine at this point in time. And he was, kind of go back to towards the start of the season where St Mirren seemed to be getting these huge performances out of guys who last season didn't really look up to much. So Richard Taylor being one of them, Toyosi Olasanya, and then Keelan Boyd-Munce and Mikko Mandron, who came in for Motherwell, where he just looked rubbish, to be honest. And after the initial kind of bounce from a few of them, like if you think that Taylor's not really played this year, not really fancied, just kind of had too many mistakes in him at the back. Olasanya's still good off the bench, but only seems to really do anything once every 4 or 5 games. Certainly an improvement still, because he looked like a competition winner before. But again, somebody's kind of fallen back to earth. Boyd-Munce to be good all season, deservedly probably like the first choice centre midfielder at this point in time. But Mandron started off really well and then he kind of dipped and you thought, he's just kind of like another, he's kind of similar to Olasanya. He's had a wee purple patch and that'll be him kind of floating off into what we kind of thought he was. But no, he's kind of bounced back from having a little bit of a, he never looked as bad as he did at Motherwell, but having kind of a bit of regression in form. And over the last 11 league games, he's got 5 goals. Like, and that's not really kind of his main job. It's to score goals. But I mean, what a header in this one, right in the corner. Jack Butland has absolutely no chance for that. And he was a big handful for that Rangers defence.
Yeah. And like there was to get the pace on the ball to put it at the corner because it's a bit of a, it's not like a bad cross, but it's a bit, not a lot of pace on it. He's having to, like, Mandron. It's Mandron's goal. It's always fun to see a player like that. And he's got the right manager in Robinson for his style of striker who's going to squeeze every single bit that he can possibly get with him. But let's move on, Fowler.
I was going to say before we move on that the most frustrating thing for St Mirren with this game as well is that it's 2 goalkeeping fuck-ups for the goals.
From Hemming, yeah.
So the first one, not only does he completely misjudge the flight of the ball, that's something he should just be catching. But then once it sails over his head, it's actually got too much pace in it for Diamande to knock it back across goal. But Hemming obviously assumes that Diamande's right behind him and wants to get something on it. All he succeeds is doing is slowing up the ball enough so Diamande can actually get there, head it across, and then Bolton like has to try and clear it, can't really do anything there. And the second one, yes, it's Bolton, I think it is, that falls into him. But he's not getting there anyway. Dessers is definitely getting there beforehand. He might be able to get closer to Dessers to make it a bit more difficult or at least kind of put pressure on Dessers like he'd be in his eye line. But he's not getting there regardless. Again, he just completely loses the flight of the ball. And I mean, I do think Hemming is a decent keeper. But fuck it, let's be petty. When the St Mirren fans are going mental at us for not having him in like the top 4 when we released our goalkeeping list, this is why. He's just got too many mistakes in him still at this point in time.
And that's what gets Rangers over the line this game, because they certainly wouldn't look like they were going to be scoring any actual goals that aren't just handed to them on a plate. So let's go to Livingston in, Fowler. Livingston have managed to keep themselves head above water in a game winning 2-0 against Ross County in the dying embers of the Tory Macaroni era. And Ross County have managed to follow up one of the performances of the season against Rangers for anyone with a defeat against, like, by far and away the worst team in the league. Lovely job in Scottish football.
It's particularly disappointing because Ross County didn't even lose at Livingston when they had Derek Adams as manager after Derek Adams had told all the players that you're a complete shit. So so to go there under John Kelly having beaten Rangers and to get beaten 2-0 is, yeah, it's a really bad result. I watched this one, like, it was hard. I wondered whether this was, like, how much was this Cowie's fault? And I mean, the buck always stops with the manager, but so tactically, I know that John Maxwell, who is somebody who used to write for Tell Me's Pelle, used to do the Ross County tactics, a man who, like, sees a football game and sees tactics in a way that I will always be very impressed by. But I watched the game back and I wasn't sure how much tactics had to do with it, because I just kind of thought that County came out, and this, I mean, this got to be some blame on Cowie as well, because they came out and it was almost like they played Rangers on Wednesday and beat them and then had to go away to Livy. And there was that kind of come down, as opposed to having 2 weeks between the games and really knowing that that is a huge result. This has given us a chance to stay up. We go to Livy, we win this game. So Johnson are playing Hibs at home. Yes, they could beat them because of the Craig Levein factor, but chances are Hibs are going to get something there. We could already be out of the relegation spots with 4 games left of the season and all the momentum on our side. And they came out and I just thought they were so flat. And Livy just looked the hungrier of the two teams. And considering the fact that Livingston have got to be looking at themselves as heading out of the division, I mean, that's really poor. But I mean, don't get me wrong, I still thought Cowie made some tactical errors. I think the main one was starting with the exact same team that beat Rangers, because that team featured, is it Mikkel or Mitchell Efeti, playing on the right wing, in the 4-2-3-1. He's either played at centre-back or right-back this season. And I think it worked pretty well against Rangers for two reasons. One, you're playing an opponent that's a lot more dangerous, so you're wanting to have a bit more protection down the flanks. And two, as I just mentioned, he was going up against Borna Barisic, whose heart is no longer in it. So he's able to rough him up and to make the ball stick. Against Livy, they were just going with, like, either diagonals or just kind of punting the ball up the line towards Efeti, and he was just getting dominated by Sean Kelly, and it wasn't working. Now, Cowie did make a tweak before the half. He brought Efeti back into defence. He moved Randall into midfield. And who was it he moved out? He moved somebody out to the right. It must have been Danda. Yeah, I think he moved Danda out to the right. And it did actually look better for the last 5 minutes before the half. So, yeah, maybe this was a tactical error, because at half time he just completely changed it. And
yeah, he brought a double sub, was it?
Yeah, he brought on Brophy and White. Jordan White for, who was it that went off again? Latourie and Sims,
aye.
Yeah. And he's tried this. So this worked the last time against Livy.
and they played everyone.
Yeah.
Playing the whole band. Half, yeah.
And I was very impressed with it, because a lot in that game, they were, what was happening and what happened for two of the goals, and I think another chance as well, is that Simon Murray would drop deep off the left and was playing through balls for Brophy. Mm-hmm. And obviously White's there occupying the minds of the defenders as well. And Livy were playing with a reasonably high line. So the balls in behind were really hurting them. And then Ross County were 2-0 up at half time. But it was also a system that worked until it didn't. Because in the second half of that game, Livingston were the better team and came back and tied up to 2-2. County won it in the last minute with Sims scoring. By that point, they'd changed their system. And it also came about as well because Livingston had put on a lot of attackers to try and get back into it, and then just kept the attackers on because they were like, okay, we need the 3 points. Let's just go for it. And so, but this one, so they're already goal down, and then, I mean, the penalty is a killer for them, because then that gives Livy real cause to just sit in.
Mm.
And at that point forward, you can't do what you were doing in that previous game. You can't have Simon Murray trying to play through walls in behind for Brophy, because it's just not the space. But I still thought they were a bit weird in their approach. That there was often too much trying to play football with nowhere to get through. Like, Danda was dropping really deep again, as you saw him doing kind of the worst of Danda towards the end of Malky Mackay's spell, when he just kept like appearing at like the fullback areas
because
he was so desperate for the ball that he was just like going that far back to try and get it and make something happen. But he was doing that and they were playing like these wee passages of play around the halfway line. And I'm just like, Livy don't give a fuck about this. They're all standing on the edge of their 18-yard line waiting for the ball to be punted forward. And, I mean, you would still say that, like, knocking up to Jordan White against Michael Devlin and Ayo Obalai should work. Neither of them are that great there, particularly Devlin, who can't jump anymore. But to be fair to Livy's defence, there was a chance that Ross County had in the first half, a little proper chance he created, which was a Michael Nottingham completely misjudging the flight of the ball, heading it backwards, and then Ayo Obalai trying to head back to Shamal George and completely selling it short. And then I think it was Sims had the chance, which George did well to rush out and save. But other than that, they did actually, they played like you think a Livy defence would do. They defended their box really well. Yeah, they were resolute, defended the box really well. Devlin had a very good game. Probably his best game since like, or at least one of his best games since like October, when he initially looked a good signing when he came in before falling off a cliff. And Livy just, a disappointing thing for Ross County is I still didn't think Livy were that great, but they didn't really have to be. Jason Holt played very well. Jamie Brandon had a decent game in front of the back four. Like I said, the feds had to make an arse of things, and George made a couple of very big saves. But other than that, there still wasn't a whole lot of quality. And for County to be beaten by that, that's really got to be concerning.
Yeah, because I saw like with the leak mistake that led to Anderson's goal, it had a similar sort of impact as, it's like Marcondes' free kick against St Johnston. It's like when you play a team suddenly and you do it early. And then so the whole game changes, and like you say, like the so like Ross County, their ace card, they left it all on the bench in Brophy and White, and like you're saying, it's better when the other team has to be a bit more vulnerable when you play all them, but that's all gone the second that Anderson goal goes in, and like and then it follows up with the penalties. So it's just like with these early goals, like I say that your game plan is just, I mean, I'm not saying anything people don't understand here, but they go out the window, and it's amazing how different a game can go. Because obviously the Hibs one, which we'll just come on to, is like the game, it suddenly changed what the narrative had been for the other games and the other two games before. This season, it completely changed. And that's exactly what happened in this game here. But that's a worry for Ross County, because now if they go into the end of the season, I mean, they're still a point behind. But that's some other teams are going to get the points against Livingston. Because what is Livingston? If Livingston don't win the next game, they're relegated. Then they're just playing dead rubbers. So
aye, that's a dangerous one, is that you've got to be, the worry is that Livingston have just been whipping boys for a lot of the season, and in 2 weeks' time they play St Johnstone. Now I still wouldn't be surprised if Livy won that match.
Yeah, of course.
But you still would look at that and still fancy St Johnstone to win it. Especially if
They'd already relegated.
Could they possibly? Well, I mean, them being already relegated would also be kind of banking on Ross County. So they still might be fighting for something, and that fight just might be enough. But it is the worst team in the league, and you kind of, it's just one of those matches you just need to take care of business. they did not.
There's a good chance your rivals will.
Yes.
And then that means that the head to heads have to be won, all that type of stuff. So that's a real stinger. After you basically just cancelled out the Rangers game right away. You've got an unlikely result that puts you back in the mix, and then you lose it right away. But fortunately for Ross County, once the pressure was off, Hibs went and absolutely took the fucking St Johnstone to absolute bits at McDermott Park in an obscenely one-sided game. But like the one at Easter Road, it was extremely one-sided, and St Johnstone won 2-1. But in this one, St Johnstone looked like they completely forgotten the art of defending, as Hibs were just careering through the middle of them at will. It was unbelievable to watch.
It was. We've talked about this before, because I think when we did the Kilmarnock 5 St Mirren 2 game, and we talked about David Watson's goal, like the mazy run where you don't have to beat anybody. But that the Martin Boyle chance, when he just had the kind of ridiculous attempted finish at the end. Yeah. But that one, it was just like, he just ran in it like a diagonal line. And nobody bothered to try and stop him. It's like, what is going on? You're in a relegation battle. Somebody at least kick him.
It was, it was really, really eye-opening. I saw the team they had, Liam Gordon was back in, Constown and McGowan. I'm like, oh, here we fucking go. Guys can't move or run, but somehow they'll be able to defend everything that comes into the box. Dan Phillips in the team, who's had some, I think the two games, had really good games against Hibs in their two victories. CDB's on, is in the mix now. And obviously with Clark being back, you just think, right, okay, that looks like a team that could cause Hibs, like the same thing could happen again. But as I said, Marcondes' goal, which has to be is the best free kick of the entire season, because it was unbelievable. That's really 30 yards out, and it's right in the top corner. And it was just, again, People will be rolling their eyes at me. Hibs fans anyway, but it fucking almost pissed me off, man. I was like, just so, all right, now it's like, it was because of the goals. It's like, right, free kicks are being pinged in for 30 yards now, and long throws are working into the box. Paul Hanlon's come off the bench and popped in a goal from a brilliant long throw, Joe Neal goal. And oh, look, Dylan Vennie's off the bench, rapping in a finish, no bother, right into the top corner when he's one on one with the goalie. Where was this? This is what it's meant to be like the whole time. So it's like, I don't want to get into criticizing too much because people can't be arsed with it. But I said, Johnston were absolutely rotten. And Hibs, especially Melida, honestly, what a player he is. People just can't get the ball off him. He just drifts around the pitch, doing whatever he wants. It's brilliant. And it's brilliant to watch. And he was running, just drifting past St Johnston players at will. Again, from a Hibs point of view,
so putting 16-year-old Fran Franzak up against them wasn't a good idea, was it? No.
Yeah, man.
Who could have possibly saw that coming?
Yeah, just rude. The lead has been, since he came in to Hibs, he's arguably been probably one of the best forwards in the league. Scores in every game nearly. Once he got up to speed a little bit after a few games, he just scores in every single game, impacts every single game. So it seems a bit unfair to put him up against that, but Melida was just drifting out. They had one cleared off the line from a Martin Boyle pass. But all the forwards at Hibs were having a field day. Martin Boyle had one of his best performances in a long time. It really, he should have done a lot better. Again, he set up that one. He arguably could have shot for that one. We spoke about the dribble earlier when he inexplicably tried to flick it over the goal. I had no idea what he was thinking there.
There's also like a few players back as well. Like it could easily, like even if it works and it goes over the goal, it just seemed like one of the defenders could have just ran back and cleared it. That was not the finish to do there.
Yeah, just no chance of that's what the doctor ordered in that situation. But he was getting on the ball a lot. He was asking a lot of questions, creating chances. He won the free kick for Marc Condesi's goal. Adam Lafondra, again, just Lafondra's just a great player to watch. He's so intelligent. He's still quick. You would never know he's his age when I watch. I don't see anything in his game that tells me that he's 37 years old because he's quite quick. Over like a 5 yard thing, he can bust through.
Other than the fact he's played for Hibs.
Yeah, other than the fact that he's played for Hibs. Yeah, because you can see how much better, how good he must have been and when he's there. So he was great. Obviously, Marc Condes got his goal. He was creating things. So who's been a big disappointment? Let's be frank with Marc Condes. He's had moments and you can see the quality he has, but.
Marc Condes is probably the, and I think I've mentioned this on our podcast, so apologies if I'm repeating myself, but Marc Condes is the type of, what he's been like at Hibs is exactly the kind of thing you might worry about with the model, if they're going to get loads of players like from Bournemouth or from that kind of system that are loaned in, and it's like, okay, show your worth kind of thing. And I know it's maybe different with him because he's a bit older.
He's recovering from an injury at Hibs, is basically what he's doing.
But you do kind of wonder as well, like how much his heart is actually in it. Like he was great in the kind of derby, and he's looked kind of good in patches. But does he have the kind of heart for the fight? And are other players like him going to be a bit similar? And they're very good, and on their day they're going to be exceptional. But when are they going to lift Hibs above what Hibs want to be lifted as? What I'm just describing is just like a Hibs player, a stereotypical Hibs player. Yeah. Very good. But does he have enough heart for the fight?
and then when you look back at his comments when he came in, when he was talking about being like, he's undercooked because he'd been injured. I don't remember the quote outright, but he's going to be getting warmed up while he's at Hibs. And that's like, now looking back, that's exactly what you have done. And that's not really what we're looking for. And finally, Mariah Welsh, is when he's playing, he's better than Triantis. I don't care what anyone says about that midfield role. He absolutely murdered, like he was just constantly getting on the ball, winning the ball back, which meant the Hibs were just constantly on top of the game and strangling the life out of St Johnston where they never got anywhere. And Paul Hanlon probably getting his final goal for Hibs in a Hibs shirt, looking at the fact that it doesn't look like he'll be getting a new contract. And St Johnston were pathetic.
I'm shaking my head because I'm just remembering Liam Gordon's defending for that throw-in. Like, he's just so slow to react. And then even, like, he has a chance to redeem himself and then doesn't do it then. And you just get, you look at that St. Johnstone team, like, why is it so easy for Hibs just to drive through you? Like,
you've got eight players in the middle of the pitch for your team.
Yeah, if that team's going to be good at anything, it's going to be stuffy. And, like, forcing Hibs to, like, if Hibs are going to win, they're going to have to do it the hard way, not to make it very, very easy for them. And also, I said as well, I can't remember if it made it into the show or not. In fact, I don't even know if I've seen that far, because I've watched the majority of Friday's show.
So I don't remember.
Yeah, I've watched the majority of Friday's show, but I'm not sure I've seen all of it. I think this did stay in, which is where I talked about the possibility of St. Johnstone finishing 11th. I was like, they just don't score goals. And I was like, the player they're actually relying on the most is Adama Sidibe, who I think is good, but he's also just come from the 7th-tier English football in January. And he's done well with some finishes so far, like the overhead kick that he scored, and scored at Easter Road as well, did he?
That was a really nice finish.
Yeah, that was a nice finish. But in this one, he's like, that's... That looks like a finish of somebody that arrived for the 17th of English football in January. That was very poor. He just got to lifts it even slightly.
Because that puts him right back Marshall. That puts him right back in the game instantly.
Yeah. That would have made it one each. So.
And then, like I said, with Marcondes, free kick, so it made them maybe slightly opened them, spooked them maybe a bit, that they weren't going to get away with the style. And I think this is what happens when team play with that style. If someone pulls a bit of quality and gets them, it can really spook everyone because the game plan, the only game plan you practice, the only game plan you're capable of, is now up the pole. So you talk about a lack of plan B, but to be honest, you look at the team, what can their plan B possibly be? There's barely any quality players, especially in terms of, like, I like Dan Phillips, but he's not a quality forward player. And like you said, Sidibe has got a lot of things to like, and he looks like he's coming on really well, but he's a pace merchant who can be a nightmare to play against. But again, he's going to need things created for him. Blah, blah, blah. There's just nobody really to do that. But let's move on. Next, finally, where shall we go further? What would you like to talk about?
Well, stick Hearts last. There was no goals in that game.
Yeah, that's always the bloody rules, isn't it? So we are going to Pittodrie, where Aberdeen defeated Motherwell in what looks like just a dead rubber now.
I mean,
what sort of talk about? You watched it. Was that a red card? Yes. Okay, next.
So, yeah, I think it was a red card. So Motherwell players, Liam Kelly, Stuart Kettlewell, I'm sure Motherwell fans as well, the sports scene analysts, they all didn't think it was a red card. Maybe broadly generalising all Motherwell fans, but I'm sure the majority think it wasn't a red card. Sports analyst didn't think it was a red card either. And I could see why. Because Jack Vale he's kind of watching the ball over his shoulder, and he does get to it first, and he hooks it away. And then he collides with Jack McKenzie, and Jack McKenzie is striding up the pitch. But it's just one of those ones in football these days, and it's a bit of an unusual one because it's not a tackle that's along the ground. Because we see this so often where somebody plays the ball and then they go into the opponent. And if they go into the opponent high, it almost doesn't really matter if the opponent's going to charge in towards you, if you play the ball, if you're putting your leg in a high area that's going to make contact and does make strong contact with your opponent, then it's going to be a red card. This is just a bit more unusual because it was a ball like dropping over his shoulder. When I first saw it, I thought immediately, that's a red card. Like, I don't even know what the controversy is. But then you do kind of see in the replay, like, how cleanly he does get on the ball, and then McKenzie goes in. Like, McKenzie kind of then arrives, and his foot and McKenzie then collide. I still think it is... It's borderline. I still think it potentially is a red. I think it would have been fine with a booking, and I think a booking is genuinely... I'll always err on the side of a booking other than a red. But I think what makes it what makes it not a strong red card, which I think it would be in most instances, and I did check with Craig Anderson about this, and he kind of led me in the right direction, which was that if it was like a straight leg, his legs kind of a bit, he's turned and hit it, and his legs kind of bent a bit. It's not like the full force straight leg, proper right into him kind of thing. I'm not describing this very well, but you know what I mean. The straight leg usually is kind of a big indicator of like how dangerous a challenge is. This wasn't that, and McKenzie does kind of create his own momentum with it. But also as well, I could see when I looked it back, Vale does look a couple of times and he knows McKenzie's there. And you know that if you put your feet high in the area where a player's going to be and is likely to be, then that's always likely to get you into trouble. And it's very harsh, and I wish that these
ones weren't. I was about to say, I wish these weren't red cards.
Yeah, I wish these weren't. But I think under the rules, and I think in precedent, there are precedent for this, then I do think it actually is one.
The Yang one at Tynecastle, for example, I don't want that to be a red card, but it kind of is now. And how can you say this isn't dangerous? He's probably stopped them from having children in the future. So, it's just one of those. Like basically, you talk about referee decisions, and I think a lot of people don't do this. Michael Stewart being the main perpetrator of this, just basically says what he wants.
Yeah,
and it just ignores the rules. And don't get me wrong, I understand where Michael Stewart comes from. A lot of the time, I feel often it the same way as him. But unfortunately, the referees don't get to just referee it how they see the utopia of football.
I was actually going to say that football utopia.
It's not for them to decide, and it's easy for us to go, "Did he like that? Should he do it?" But they don't get that. They don't get that sort of comfort. But Aberdeen. Getting a big victory, obviously a good performance off the back of the Celtic game where they were really impressive in that game, and it looks like they got the timing just about right for getting Jimmy Phelan in, and the players knowing that this kid can't really peter out if they want to be around next season. Blah 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 blah.
I still don't think it was that great a performance while the game was still 11 against 11. Mm-hmm. They were very, other than one, a bit of what's weirdly become a bit of a kind of tradition now with a Nicky Devlin brain fart. Apart from that, kind of later in the game where he allowed someone in behind him, just kind of misreading the situation, and that led to a Motherwell chance. Other than that, Motherwell didn't create anything with 10 men. And I know that that's difficult to do away from home, but like Aberdeen were kind of starting to sit a little bit, because Aberdeen still, even after that very good performance against Celtic, still look like a team very short in confidence. And I thought that in the first half, quite a lot of times. It was quite an even game, but there was often when Aberdeen got the ball in advanced areas, and you see guys like Paul Vara, who I don't necessarily think had a bad game by any means. I was actually quite impressed with him in a number of situations, but I think him, and I saw Clarkson do it at points as well, is that instead of taking a ball into an area and trying to let it run through you and trying to beat your man and then kind of build up ahead of steam going towards the opponent's goal, it would be like take a touch back the way and then take a couple more touches and then play it out wide and kind of almost start again. Other than Junior Hoylett, they didn't really see anybody trying anything or putting the ball into the penalty area very often. Jack McKenzie putting a very good cross for Majovski that was just a wee bit too far and made it a little bit too acute an angle for Majovski to do anything with it. But other than that, it was mainly just kind of Hoylett getting on the ball and putting balls in the area. The only problem with that is that his delivery in the first half was absolute pish. So that didn't really help Aberdeen. Whereas Motherwell, the other end, not that impressive themselves. I don't think Bear had a good game. But they were able to get a bit of joy from Lenny Miller and Drakovsky just kind of doing very well at winning the ball back in Aberdeen's half and then kind of starting from there. That's where Blair Spittle's two chances in the opening period ultimately came from. But the goal just changed. The red card completely changes the game because Aberdeen scored not long after that through Gartman, and then they really should have got another couple. They wasted some very, very good chances on the counter-attack. Esker Sokler as well, just two real kind of...
Are you ever
going to look good? Because you really show flashes from time to time. But his decision...
Not in the league, he doesn't.
not in the league, he doesn't. His decision to shoot when they had that basically 3-on-1 after Motherwell gifted them the ball.
Yeah.
It was very bad. And he was a bit unlucky that he slips, but he shouldn't be shooting for that area right away anyway. He should be kind of taking a second to think about it. And then he's played in behind not long after, and he tries to go around the goalie and makes a complete arse of that as well. But they did have other chances, Aberdeen, to add to the score. And they're just, yeah, like I said, they're a team that's still very brittle in terms of confidence, and I don't think that's really going to change until the summer.
And finally, Kilmarnock 0, Heart of Midlothian 0. Hearts have to wait a tiny teensy-weensy bit longer to confirm third place and group stage football. But Fowler, like, I mean, I done a tiny totsy bit of reading. I saw that Cammy Devlin had quite a good game. And I mean, is that an example of like how good he could be if he knew how to shoot?
Yeah. So he did have a decent shot in this game, but it's those are very few and far between, and I don't think we'll be seeing many of them. I don't think that'll be a regular occurrence at Tynecastle going forward. Yeah, because he is very good at getting in the opposing penalty area and getting beyond the defenders and using that quickness he's got and that energy to be a nuisance. And he can make things happen, but it's not just these lack of shooting that when he gets in the penalty area that's a problem for him. It's often like when he gets into spaces, he's like, you can see the nosebleed almost occurring. You're like, oh no, what do I do now? I'm not used to being here.
But he should be used to being there. He's there a lot. That's what I was going to say. Gary Devlin is, and when Devlin's at his best, because I spoke about this with Craig Anderson on the semi-final pod that we'd done to get those two games, and it was something I thought about Devlin is that he wasn't playing his full package like he normally would. Normally, he goes everywhere. He goes into the box, regardless if he feels good, which is always just another number, because Devlin doesn't get tired, so he'll go back. So it doesn't. You might as well go into the box because you've got the ability and the fitness to get everywhere. But I always feel like it's weird that he never seems to get more comfortable, no matter how many times he seems to get in these areas.
He's just a player that lacks composure in every facet of his game. Yeah. Because he lacks composure in terms of his passing. He lacks composure in terms of... I mean, he doesn't get... I think he's maybe only been sent off once in his Hearts career. I might be wrong about that, but only one springs to mind. But he obviously commits a lot of fouls and gets booked a lot and sometimes has to be taken off before he's sent off. So that's a bit of an issue as well. So he lacks kind of composure in that aspect of his game. And he certainly lacks composure when he gets into the final third or breaks into the penalty area. But it does show that he does kind of have that ability to go beyond the opposing team, which is something that Hearts do lack within their squad in general, because there's just not really that kind of box-to-box type of player. And he could be that, but if you're a box-to-box player, you need to be able to finish with some regularity, and that's not him. But he was key to Hearts being the much better team in the first half. I mean, I was very surprised, pleasantly surprised at how much Hearts, certainly in terms of chances, dominated that period. And Naismith had got to give credit to Naismith for that. He played our back four every other game against Killie this season, but decided to change it to a three at the back. Mm-hmm. And I think that caught Killie quite cold because Killie just lined up in a straight on 4-4-2.
Yeah, because Robbie Deese was left back, wasn't he?
Yes, Robbie Deese was at left back and Joe Wright was right back. But that extra man in midfield meant that Devlin was allowed to kind of run free, and Grant had a bit more space as well. There was just a surprising amount of space for Hearts to move through the Killie midfield. But they needed to score when they were on top, because it got to half-time and I kind of thought, we're not winning this game because Killie are going to make an adjustment and they're just going to play a lot better in general, because Killie's performance in the first half wasn't very good. And that's kind of what happened in the second period. It wasn't like Killie were then immediately on top. The last 15 minutes, it was the team that looked like they were going to score the most. But before then, the two teams just kind of cancelled each other out in the second period. And then Killie brought on Van Veen for Vassell, and Vassell had not had a good game. And that gave them a wee bit more danger in the final third. And I was starting to get a bit worried the Hearts were going to lose this, because not that it's still very unlikely that Killie would catch Hearts, but this means they definitely won't. I mean, it's not mathematically impossible, but it's 11 points with 4 games to go. They're not going to get 12 points. We may get none, but they're not going to get 12 points required to overtake us.
Oh, no, man. Anyone can beat the Old Firm.
Aye, if they beat them both again, I mean, fucking hell, that'd be quite something. It's very
fucking hell. You look at a bunch of shit in the bed trying to get through to this fucking running. It is fucking possible.
Killie are not going to get 4 points for the last four games. And if they do, Hearts are unlikely to lose every single match.
Hearts will lose every single match. No, of course not.
So it seems like this is it done and dusted, and that's, at the end of the day, that's fine. But it was frustrating that they just couldn't make those chances and those opportunities count in the first half, because it just would have been a really good kind of pick me up for everybody at the club after
the semi.
And I mean, results have been a bit more laboured of late, and it would have been a nice reminder, just a nice boastful reminder for ourselves and for the rest of the league. Like, we are undoubtedly the third best team, but. Oh, well, a point was fine.
Just before we finish, I mean, just I'm interested in the Vassell thing, because obviously Armstrong and Vassell, especially, like pegging the old balls in. But was it Frankie Kent again that you would expect to see, the one that sort of dominated Vassell in this one, if you're saying he played poorly?
I think it was just the Hearts' defence as a collective. It helped that they had the spare
man.
Which
is a big performance then, because against Rangers, they sort of struggled, didn't they? Especially Rowles in the semi-final.
Yeah, aye. Just as a collective, like, I just didn't think Vassell was really at it. It just wasn't really one of his better performances. It's actually a performance where I felt like he looked among his least effective for him, because even like the match earlier in the season when Hearts marshalled them pretty well, the 1-0 game, I still thought he was quite a danger in that one. He was still, like, in that one, I think I'd praised Hearts for kind of sitting off him a bit more, letting him kind of turn with the ball, but he was still there, he was still involved, he was still like a real threat in the game. Whereas in this one, he just didn't really do it. And another sub that actually improved Kelly, if you talk about Danny Armstrong, and maybe this, to go full circle, to go back to start, maybe we shouldn't be putting him on the plane to Germany if Kelly got better after you were subbed off for Gary Mackay-Steven, who actually could have done stuff and ran at players. Where the fuck was that at Tynecastle, Gary?
Where the fuck's been that for the last 4 years? Maybe he wants on the plane. So he's really, really going for it now, Gary Mackay-Steven. He's like, well, if fucking James Forrest can do it, maybe I can somehow manufacture some way to Germany. But 4 games to go, and then we can put this fucking wretched season behind us and move on with our lives and go for a fucking shindig in Germany. Because the beauty for Germany is, I really want Scotland to win, but I will be able to recover from Scotland getting humped in each game and just have a laugh on holiday with my pals. It'll be like, you know, like, whereas this has been a fucking slog from my point of view. And I'm going to go on and talk about it incessantly, week to week to week. I even went on a Hibs podcast last week on the Hibs Ramble, just because I wanted like a 5-minute period when I got to just talk about Nick Montgomery, not just in passing. I want this as a focused thing. And went looking for another platform to do it.
Did you get in touch with them? Please bring me on.
They asked me if I would do a pod, their awards show at the end of the season for the Ramble, and I was like, "Aye, of course, that's fine." And then they were like, "We've got other shows if you fancy." I was like, "Well, I'll come on then before anything else happens, so I can talk about Nick Montgomery in all his glory."
Yeah, well, if you want to hear not Tory talking about Nick Montgomery and all his glory, but instead Duncan Mackay talking about Nick Montgomery and all his glory, he and Tom Watt recorded a podcast that I'm pretty much going to put up simultaneously along with this one. So that's going to be our Patreon. So patreon.com/terracepodcast. If you want to listen to that, I think that'll be on the £5 a month tier. So yeah, 40 minutes of Duncan explaining why he thinks Nick Montgomery is shit.
Yeah. At least we're all on the same page. And then, and then I take it, what, did they just switch around and just do the Aberdeen one?
No, we've not got to that yet. We'll do that soon, actually, because it was initially planned for last week, and they've done it last night instead. That was before Aberdeen season was pretty much done, so they could have done it, but it was kind of.
Yeah, might as well wait and see in case there was any sort of issue that they could. Yeah. I get you. That it could. And tomorrow I am meeting Fowler again in this exact same position to go through the top 12. Centre midfielders in the Scottish Premiership. You can all shout at us, slag us incessantly. I do love it, just seeing the engagement on those tweets compared to everything else. People fucking love lists, man.
It's, aye, they do.
Nothing gets people going more than a list. So we look forward to that, and I'll not read any of the things you say that are rude to me. And then we'll crack on with the rest of our lives. And thanks for watching. Of you for the Terrace, everyone that watched it, I'm sure that's that finished for another year. patreon.com/terracepodcast if you want to join us and get billions more content all the time. You can follow us on Twitter. There's TikTok going on these days.
Please join. One final thing, please, if you have not already and you like to watch podcasts, please, or even if you want to see, even if you're like, oh, no, I generally just like to listen to you, but I do have a YouTube account, and I will just check it occasionally if there's something that lines up with a podcast that I could do with seeing a visual representation of it, then please subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're closing in on 1,000 subscribers, and if you could join that, then you could get us there a lot quicker. And that would be very much appreciated.
I'll start doing pods topless, and then watch the subscriptions shoot through the roof with my overweight, scaly skin. So there we go.
How can you turn down that offer?
If I've got 1,000 subscribers, then who knows? But as always, thanks you for listening. And since further we normally do this, I'll see you. Enjoy your football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.